great to see so many lovely faces here. And for you guys online, great to have you there too. My name's Stan, and I am a workaholic. I've been a workaholic for as long as I can remember. From the time I was 16 years old, I've been working full-time jobs and plus extra jobs and things like that. Prioritizing work over pretty much everything. In my early days of doing that, I believed that that was all about success and money and trying to achieve more. As I later came to learn and understand even more about myself, I realized that mainly I was doing that because I like to please people. As I look out across this auditorium, I think, that's impossible. There are so many people, and there have been so many people in my life, and I was always trying to please people. When I got married and then started having children, this became a huge tension in my life because my job needed me, right? My job needed me to work long hours and weekends and everything, and it just had to be that way. And I reconciled that and justified it through the filter that I was doing all that to provide for my family because they like to eat and they like to have a roof over their head. So I have to do this, right? Anybody with me? Yeah. It's okay if you are, okay? Because that's actually a truth, okay? It's our responsibility to provide for our families. Then, in my mid-20s, something else captured my attention. And that was serving God through the local church. I developed a passion for people who did not yet know Jesus. So I invested every moment I could find in ministering. Still working just as much as I was working. And now raising a small family that was growing, and I just couldn't get enough of the ministry side of it then. So I discerned that God was leading me towards vocational ministry so that I could do ministry as a job. So that meant, along with my work and my ministry and my family, I needed to add in Bible college. Now, I'm a fairly high-capacity person. So I thought, yes, I can juggle all of that for a while. And I did. I juggled it all for a while. But by God's grace in my life, He actually did allow my ministry to become my work. But that didn't solve things because the work was gone. But now, all that time plus was devoted to ministry. And ministry was my work, but there's always more ministry to do and always more people to please. Of course, I could justify all of that, especially now. My ministry is my work, and there are heaps of Bible verses that talk about working hard and not being lazy and serving Jesus with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength. So if anybody had a problem with what I was doing, that's on them. Yeah, right? Are you with me? You should be excited about that. I was. As you may expect, that tension kept growing. The needs of family and the demands of ministry were in constant competition. And remember, I like to please people, but I started to see a pattern. And that pattern was this, that I was always going to disappoint someone, everyone at some point. Everyone was going to get a turn in that. And I was not excited. Most of you can relate to this tension. Even if it's not about ministry, most of us are challenged by juggling the demands of life. And most of us want to answer the question, how do we manage the tension of busy schedules, demands at work, kids' schedules, church schedules, family's expectations, friends' expectations? How do we manage that tension? Anybody want to know how we do that? Come on. Okay. All right, Pastor Justin and I want to know. I don't know about the rest of you. You can listen in while we learn. See, and when you throw your faith into the mix of all this, there is often a collision. Now, I could tell you stories all day long today about people I know who have had faith and family collide, and the results were catastrophic. I could tell you about ministries that have failed. I could tell you about moral breakdowns. I could tell you about marriage bust-ups. I could tell you about kids who left the church and even faith, because faith and family collided. You can probably tell already. I'm remembering some of those stories that I could be telling you right now. You can probably tell this is something I'm a little bit passionate about, is trying to work out this tension about faith and family colliding, because it is so dangerous. When faith and family collide, no one wins. Actually, there is one winner. Our enemy, the devil, who is seeking to devour us. If he can take our families out, he can rock our faith. He can shake our faith. And he can destroy us. That's his goal. So what do we do with this tension? Juggling all of the things, the family, friends, work, faith. Well, in my journey of trying to sort this tension out, I read heaps of books on leadership. I did a deep dive into scriptures. And this is what I concluded. We can't eliminate the tension. We cannot eliminate the tension. It is always going to be there. Are you happy about that? That was worth coming today, wasn't it? Just gave you all this big setup and said, you can't eliminate it. But by God's grace, we can avoid the collision. So we're not going to eliminate the tension in this series. It's going to be there. But my heart and hope is that we will be able to help each and every one of you avoid the collision, or at least make the collisions be fender benders and not total write-offs. Okay, that's the goal. So in my journey through all that study and trying to figure it all out, I ran across Exodus chapter 18. Exodus chapter 18 is a passage that transformed my thinking, and over the next few weeks, we're going to unpack some of the learning from that chapter, as well as other passages that are going to help us live out our faith, help us prioritize our families, and be great employees, have vibrant friendships, and thrive in life. That is my hope today. As we go to Exodus 8, chapter 18, I need to give you a little backstory. Leading up to this chapter, we've seen Moses answer the call of God to lead the children of Israel out of the slavery they were in Egypt. He was leading them out, and we've seen Israel's journey to freedom through some rough patches. They took a detour, they went the long way, and you can get all of this back on the YouTube channel and things. Listen to these sermons in the Reality Bites series if you like. But Israel, we saw them get trapped. We saw them experience hunger and thirst. We saw them attacked by enemies. And through all of that, they were witnessing God's deliverance, his provision, his protection, and his mercy and his grace. As we come to chapter 18, I would suggest to you that their leader, Moses, was a tired individual. He had been through a lot. He was working hard. It was not an easy job to lead 2 million plus people out of Egypt. And then, as he's leading them through the desert, they're complaining all the time about him. Moses would have been tired and probably even burned out. And that's where we pick it up in Exodus chapter 18. Verse 2 says this: earlier, Moses had sent his wife, Zipporah, and his two sons back to Jethro, who had taken them in. Here we see a couple of words that tell us something about Moses that you may not have ever picked up before. Wife and sons. Moses had a family. Now, when you think about Moses, we don't normally think about Moses as a family guy. But he had a family. In Exodus chapter 2, that's when this family thing all started happening. He had escaped Egypt after he murdered an Egyptian. All right. And then as he was a refugee running from Pharaoh, he came to a place called Midian, and he sat down by a well there, and along came seven daughters of this guy called Jethro, all right? These daughters were coming to water the sheep. So they were hardworking girls. And then there were some other shepherds that came along, and they were bullying the girls and trying to move them along. And Moses, you know what Moses did, right? Moses jumped in, and he took care of the other shepherds so that the ladies could get water for their sheep. And he actually watered their sheep for them. Moses jumped in. He was a rescuer. Now, guys, all right, all the guys in the building, single guys, any single guys in the building? This is a lesson for you, all right? This is how to get a girl, all right? Because that's what happened here. And by the way, if you think the Bible is boring, go back and read stuff like this. Sitting at the well trying to pick up chicks, and right? And then he waters the sheep, and he goes home, and Jethro says, hey, which one do you want? Right? Yeah. Give it a try, guys. Then come talk to me for pre- and post-marriage counseling. Chapter 18, verse 3. We move on. Moses' first son was named Gershom, for Moses said, when the boy was born, I have been a foreigner in a foreign land. His second son was named Eleazar, for Moses said, the God of my ancestors was my helper. He rescued me from the sword of Pharaoh. Now, the names of Moses' sons were actually a reflection of who he was, his character, and the things that had shaped his own identity. Gershom means foreigner in a foreign land. As we go through this series, you'll realize that realizing that we are all strangers in a foreign land is going to be crucial to managing this tension that we've been talking about, that this isn't the end, that this life, this world is not all there is to it, and we need to understand that we are strangers here. And then the second son, the God of my ancestors was my helper, Moses said. It shows us Moses was a man of faith. He believed in the God that he had been serving, leading Israel out of Egypt. But as again, we don't normally think of Moses as a family man. We think of Moses as a deliverer, a rescuer, a leader who took Israel out of Egypt. Here, however, we see Jethro, his father-in-law, bringing Moses' family back to him. Now, I don't know about you, but the first time I ever saw that created a tension for me. Remember, I experienced this when I'm trying to manage all this tension about faith and work and family colliding and all that. And when I see Moses doing all this stuff, but he has a family, and Jethro's bringing his family back to him, that was a tension for me. And I asked the question, why did Moses send his wife and kids back to Jethro? Did anyone else ask that question? You should have, because it's just there, and it's weird. It's like, he's bringing them back. Oh, why were they gone? Well, it's a couple of points of view of this. And the reality is we don't know for sure, but I'm going to share with you two points of view and let you choose what you want to believe. Most likely, the point of view that I land on is that Moses did this to protect Zipporah and the kids from the horrors of what had happened in Egypt and what would be happening in Egypt. That he did not want to subject his family to what he knew was already going on in Egypt. So he sent them away to go and do the ministry. I picked that up because it says in verse 1 of chapter 18 that Jethro had heard all that God had done, especially leading Israel out of Egypt. So I think Jethro then says, okay, it's safe now. I can take Zipporah and the kids back to him. So that's where I kind of land on that one. The other possibility, however, and some scholars believe this, is that there was a domestic dispute over a practice of faith. And the word sent away can be translated the same as divorce, when Moses sent them away back to Jethro. Exodus chapter 4, 24 to 26, you can read that on your own sometime. But Moses and Zipporah had a difference of opinion about circumcision. Now, circumcision was a Jewish ritual that was a part of being a Jew. You had to do that. It was core to their faith, to the Jewish faith. And Moses had apparently gone along with Zipporah, because Zipporah, as a Midianite woman, Midianites were against circumcision. They thought it wasn't necessary, you shouldn't do it. And apparently he had gone along with her on this and not circumcised one of their children. So Moses gets really sick, and the text is really short, but it tells us Moses got really sick. The Lord was making him sick, and in the end, Zipporah actually circumcised her own son, and she was not happy about it, but she realized that's what had to happen for Moses not to die. Moses didn't die, and Zipporah was a bit grumpy. Okay, so that's the three verses there in Exodus chapter 4 that you can go back and look up. So some people think that because of that dispute, that domestic dispute over faith practice, that Moses sent her away because he didn't want the distraction and to have to deal with her anymore because of what he was about to do. Now, you can decide which option you want to go with, but in the end, the reality is Moses sent his wife and kids back to his father-in-law to stay with family while he led the children of Israel out of Egypt. Now, after a season apart, Jethro is coming back. And look at this. I love this verse. Jethro had sent a message to Moses saying, "I, Jethro, your father-in-law, am coming to see you with your wife and your two sons." Any son-in-laws in the house? How would you like to get a message from your father-in-law? It says, "Coming to see you, son, with your wife and kids." Boom, boom, boom. You know, I think that this was a gentle, loving confrontation. And we're going to look at that over the next few weeks in week three of the series. That's my favorite week of the series. We're going to look at Jethro's advice to Moses and how he could actually live a more balanced life than he was at the time. But that message from the father-in-law, when I read that, I smile. And I have a great father-in-law. And by the way, if you happen to be listening to this, good on you. Thanks. You've taught me a lot and I love you heaps. But I don't want to hear this, that my father-in-law is coming to visit me and bringing my wife and kids. That's kind of scary. But anyway, today, I want us to finish up by looking at two questions that I feel like our text and the discussion we've had so far have got to be answered. And hopefully you've already asked these questions in your mind. Because, see, Moses clearly sent his family away while he did the work God had called him to do. There's no disputing that. Moses did that. So the question for Moses is, did he have mixed up priorities? And for you and I today, the question is it okay for us to leave our family for work or ministry? And this is not gender specific, men or women. We can all answer this question. Is it okay for us to leave our family for work or ministry? Now, some of you right now are already just about to check out. You're actually thinking, can I slip out the door? Because he shouldn't even be asking that question. That's a ridiculous question to even ask because the answer is clearly no, right? Are you with me on that? But can I suggest to you that you need to consider a few things? First of all, consider culture. Culture. See, when we look at this situation through our largely Western eyes, living in a country that is extremely family friendly, we have a limited context for being able to understand what's happened here. And to answer that question for ourselves, I'd invite you, just if you're in the room, look around the room just for a second. Spin your head all the way around, right? There's a large number of people in this room today who are first-generation immigrants. A large number of those people in the room today that are first-generation immigrants had to actually do this to get here. They had to leave a wife and kids or a husband and kids. They had to leave family behind to come here to establish pathways for everyone else to come join them. Some people in this room were here for many months, even a year or two, trying to make that happen for different reasons, to provide a better life for the families and for different reasons, and everybody's story is unique. So before we immediately answer, no way, it's not okay, well, is it? And consider also that culturally, It's only in the Western world that we have this nuclear family idea where mom and dad and the kids, and that's all there is, raising the kids. For a lot of cultures, and a lot of cultures represented in this room, everybody's involved in raising the family. So it'd be very normal for grandpa and grandma to be a part of raising the family. My kids do not listen to that and do not hold me to that. Thank you. Raise your kids. You made those kids. Yeah, yeah. So. All right, so we got to consider, when we're answering this question, we need to consider culture. So it's not quite as obvious as it seems. We also need to consider calling. Looking at Abraham, words that God spoke to Abraham in Acts chapter 7, verse 3, it's recorded for us. God told him, leave your native land and your relatives, and come into the land that I will show you." God told Abraham, leave where you're at and leave your family. Leave your relatives. Leave your extended family. There was a calling. Friends, mission workers do this every day. People that go overseas to serve God do this every day. Some leave children behind at different stages. You would have known over the last month, if you've been with us, that the Smiths are about to leave and go to South Asia. They're leaving behind two adult children and a daughter-in-law now. And that's not easy, not an easy decision for them, because it's not that their adult children don't still need them. Who has adult children? Do your adult children still need you? Oh. Well, Tuesday we'll talk in the cake. Right. They do. But a calling can mean that you have to make that decision. In some contexts, kids of missionaries end up going to boarding school in a neighboring country to where the missionary is actually serving, separating families. Families take children back from the mission field to go to university or to get them established in their home country. We actually did that. Sometimes families leave kids. Sometimes then kids grow up and leave families. They're grown up, and because of a calling, they are leaving to go and do whatever God has asked them to do. And sometimes that's not all that easy, because family actually may still need them at some level. And it's a sacrifice for everyone involved. So when we start looking back at this question, is it okay for us to leave family for work or ministry? It's not as easy to answer as it seemed like when we first asked it, is it? One more thing we need to consider is caution. Now, some of the things that I described don't relate to any of you, okay? Some of them don't. Some of you, it's a daily grind thing. It's work, life, family, friends, all that balance and faith, okay? And that's where the majority of you are going to be landing. That's more practical and relevant. So when we consider the priority of work and family, and should we spend as much time as we do at work? Should we spend as much time as we do in our hobby? Should we spend as much time with friends and all that, and the sacrifice of family? It's not quite as easy to answer that question there. A couple of cautions. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 4 says, "Don't wear yourself out trying to get rich. Be wise enough to know when to quit." If your motive is money, if your motive is getting ahead and being more successful in life, maybe you want to exercise some caution. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5 says, "Don't love money. Be satisfied with what you have, for God has said, I will never fail you. I will never abandon you." Friends, in our Western culture, we need to learn contentment. We always want just a little bit more, just one more thing, one more toy, one more latest this, latest that. And friends, can I just share with you about your kids right now, those of you that have kids? Your kids are not going to be impressed by the runs you get on the board at your job. They're not. They are not going to be impressed by promotions that you get. Now, they may enjoy some of the spoils of it. If you're making more money, they get more toys and they get more video games and all that. They babysit them while you're out making more money and stuff like that, right? You see the thing that happens there? No one else can be a spouse to your spouse. No one else can be a parent to your child. No one else can be a grandparent to your grandkids. No one else can be the auntie and the uncle that you are to your nephews and nieces. Friends, it may be okay to work hard, but use caution. Check your motives and what's really important. Now, none of these situations are as straightforward as we would like for them to be. We've already clearly established that today, because we want the tension to be relieved. We want to eliminate the tension. Every situation is going to deserve lots of prayer, lots of consideration, consultation, and we need to be honest about our motives. And if you get to a point where you determine that you feel like in that situation it is okay for me to leave wife and kids, leave my family while I'm doing work or ministry, let me give you three words that you really need to filter it through. Be selective. That's the consideration, care, and prayer. Consultation. Be selective. Don't just do it every time there's an opportunity. Select the opportunities that really call for that. For a season, this should never be the consistent recurring theme. Jethro was bringing Moses' family back to him after about a year, year and a half away from them. It was a season. It wasn't forever. And then supported. If you're going to make this kind of decision, get the people around you that are going to be affected by the decision to talk about it. And it needs to be supported. If the family's not on board with it, don't do it. Make sense? The other question, that was just one of the questions that landed today. Was it okay? The other question is, what do we do when our practice of faith may be different than that of our family members? You remember the story with Moses and Zipporah and that faith practice that caused them a domestic dispute? What if you're married to someone who has a different faith background than you do? How do you manage that? How do you live with that? Now, some of you would say, well, hang on a minute. Why are you married to someone who has a different faith background than you to start with? Lots of possibilities here. Lots of possibilities, like you came to faith after you're married, or maybe you actually weren't that concerned about it at the time, and it's now become a bigger issue than you ever thought it would, those kind of things. So don't just completely dismiss that person and say, well, hey, they made their bed, let them lie in it. No. When you are involved in a relationship, where faith practices collide with your partner, Paul speaks to this about what you should do in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. He says, don't you wives realize that your husbands might be saved because of you? Don't you husbands realize your wives might be saved because of you? He says, don't leave. Don't run away from that situation. We need to live with them with respect and understanding. We still need to live out our faith, but in a respectful way. And this is applicable not just for marriage, but all of our family relationships, extended family relationships, where we have faith practices that are different than what ours might be. We need to be respectful. See, our conduct matters. When people are observing us, when people, especially from different faith backgrounds and beliefs, that don't buy into this whole following Jesus thing that you've adopted in your life, people that don't buy into that don't understand why you're so committed to it. And you want to live in a way that it's going to draw them to, not repel them from. And friends, this is a big risk here. For some of you, it could be that you have an unbelieving spouse. And the amount of time you spend ministering at church is an obstacle. Because they actually look at that and they say, well, she loves the church more than me, or he loves the church more than me. The church is more important than me. So why would I want to be a part of that? Friends, be careful. It doesn't mean don't serve. It doesn't mean don't come to church. It doesn't mean any of that. But it means be careful and live with respect and honor towards that spouse in a way that is going to draw them to you, or friends that will draw them to them. Where's the line? Well, if it causes you to deny your faith, compromise something like that, then that's a pretty solid line. But the rest of it's probably a little bit gray. And you need to live with those people with honor and respect. So how do we manage the tension of busy schedules, demands at work, kids' schedules, church schedules, family and friends' expectations? How do we manage that? No easy answer. The tension's real, and it's always going to be there. We're not going to get rid of it. We've already talked about that. But we need to live in such a way and manage it in such a way that we avoid the collision. I know this from experience. Throughout your life and throughout my life, every day, we have the opportunity to disappoint people. Do you know that? Every single day, you have this opportunity. And you usually embrace it, right? We have this opportunity. So here's the key. Here's the key. When you have those opportunities, spread the disappointment around. Okay? Now, when I shared this with Simon on Friday, because I was wrestling with that, and he was a little reluctant, saying, I'm not sure you should say that or not. Well, clearly I did anyway. But he did say, you probably want to explain what you mean. Because we're not in the business of just spreading disappointment, right? What I'm saying is that you don't want to disappoint the same people every time, right? You don't want to every day disappoint the family because you're never there. You're never showing up. You're never at the sport game. You're never at this event. You're never at that. You're never at family dinner. But you don't want to disappoint work every day either, right? If you call in every day, oh, no, I've got family stuff on. I got family stuff on. Eventually, the boss is going to say, well, hang on a minute. You enjoy your family stuff, right? But don't be looking for the deposits coming anymore, right? You see the tension there? Every day, you're going to disappoint people. Spread that around, okay? Make wise choices. Make choices that are going to do the most good in the world and in your life. Manage the tension before it becomes a collision. Disappoint people, sure, but spread it around. Not the same people every time. Father, thank you so much for the day. Thank you for your word. Thank you for, Lord, even the laughs we've been able to have on some of this stuff. But Lord, we laugh because not because it's necessarily so funny, but because it's so real for us. Lord, we all have times in our lives where faith and family, faith and work, family and work, friends and family, all this stuff creates chaos and collisions in our lives. And Lord, I just pray that you would speak to our hearts and help us be people who are first and foremost living our lives for an audience of one, who are living before you, making decisions before you, being guided by you, listening to your voice. So when these things that aren't black and white in life come our way, we can hear what your spirit is telling us to do. Lord, thank you for your spirit. Thank you as we celebrate even on Pentecost Sunday that your spirit is there to help guide us through these tensions and help us avoid the collisions. Thank you, God, for your love for us and your provisions in our lives. In Jesus' name.